This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover a lot of things around the Umpqua Valley. And today we want to talk about drug court. And Judge Robert Johnson is in. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, Kyle. Thanks. Glad to be back.
So I guess, first of all, let's not assume that everybody knows. Kind of explain what drug court is.
Drug court is a treatment court program that was started in 1996 here in Douglas County by Judge Robert Milliken. And it gives, it's kind of evolved over its existence, but effectively where it's at now is it gives folks who have substance abuse issues that are related to their criminal justice experience. It allows for them to have the opportunity to treat in the community and be rehabilitated as an alternative to prison.
And do you remember much about how this idea, where it kind of, how it came together?
Originally?
Yeah.
I was 12 years old when it started, so I wasn't really involved with the inception of the program. But the idea is, I believe, again, I say it started in 96 here in Douglas County, and I'm pretty sure we were one of the first in Oregon to have a program like this. I think it started maybe in Florida in the early 90s, and I think it was in response to some of the drug problems we were having nationwide. So it's a nationwide program. It's not exclusive to our jurisdiction, but it's a nationwide program. And I think that what was happening, give you my best guess, or I guess it's more of an educated guess, is that folks were being incarcerated, and we saw that a lot of that was derivative of their substance abuse. And so I would imagine, you know, at that time, they took a look at whether or not there was alternatives, because, as you know, going to prison is costly for taxpayers, and treating folks and rehabilitating them in the community to be productive members of society is at times, and I say more often than not, a better situation.
Now, how long have you been the, is it drug court administrator? Is that the right term?
I'm a drug court judge. We have a drug court coordinator who I think you've communicated with before. But in addition to my general docket, I've been presiding over drug court effectively since I took the bench. This is August of 25, and I started in July of 22. So I think I took over drug court a couple weeks in. So this is actually my 3-year anniversary of being the drug court judge.
So what's it been like? Anything that, you know, is it just different than typical court in just about every way?
Well, we have a special guest here who you're going to talk to in a minute, and I think he can shed some light on that. But from my point of view, absolutely different than a typical court setting. In the United States, we have an adversarial justice system, and what that means is oftentimes you have the state or the prosecution who are pursuing interests on behalf of the state, and then you have the defendant who is asserting their interests, and then the jury or the judge figures it out for them. In this type of situation, you have a team composed of prosecutor from the state, the defense attorney, and you have probation, parole and probation. So there's a probation officer there, and members from treatment program that the folks engage in, and also folks from Department of Human Services. So they get full wraparound treatment. And the difference between the adversarial system is it's more of a collaborative effort where everybody's working together to try to pursue the same outcome effectively.
So your guest that's in with us today is your speaker tomorrow night at the graduation. Curtis Wall Street Carroll, why don't you, well, first of all, how'd you get connected to him?
Well, so last August, I had a mentor of mine who was a speaker at our drug court graduation, Professor Mark Harris from California Merced. He came up and spoke at graduation. And over the holidays, I was visiting Professor Harris, and he said, I got somebody who you need to meet. He introduced me over Thanksgiving dinner to Wall Street here. Me and him have become good friends, and I have been blown away by his story and how he's using his story to affect positivity in people within his circles. And I thought it would be a great opportunity for him to come and share some thoughts with our drug court graduate.
So Wall Street, get real close to the microphone there. And where do you live?
Thank you for having me. So I live in California. We drove down from California yesterday. And so it was an honor and a privilege to be here today. Like the judge says, to come down and check out to see how the court system is working, just and then have the opportunity to speak to the men and women at the graduation tomorrow.
So if you are speaking at this event, you've probably got a lot of experience maybe on both sides of this.
I do. I was incarcerated myself for 27 years. I went to prison when I was a teenager. And while in prison, I developed a knack for financial literacy. And I took that knack and developed it into a financial program that the governor's office, the probation office, the many branches of the government supported to get the program up and running so we could help men and women who were incarcerated at the time go through a program to teach them about financial education and financial literacy. So that was my, if you will, contribution to change while I was incarcerated.
So when you went in, you were how old?
I was 16, 17 years old when I went in.
So how long up the road was it before you got interested in the whole financial area?
Probably about, maybe 5 or 6 years in, I guess, while I was doing my time, to when I kind of discovered. I didn't learn how to read and write until I was in my 20s. So after I learned how to read and write is when I started to develop and wanted to have a knack for financial education. So I started to pursue that area as opposed to the traditional transformative programs they have in prison. My thinking was more around kind of financial literacy. And the prison system at that time, even probably to the day, didn't have any sort of programs around financial education. So I developed and designed one.
Wow. Now, a lot of people in their 20s honestly aren't all that interested in financial information other than, you know, just their paycheck and having enough money and all that. What was it about it that attracted you to realizing this could be helpful as kind of a path moving forward?
Crime. So I was taught to be a criminal, and from my peers in the community in which I grew up in, which is in Oakland, California, and that knack stuck with me. And so while incarcerated, I recognized that money had the same type of, and in many cases it was bigger in prison than it was on the streets. And so when I got inside and started to get wrapped into all of the drama that comes with prison, I recognized that much of my problem was around money. Much of the crimes that I committed was around money. Much of my selfish thinking was around money. And there was nothing to kind of deal with that. And so my approach was to address that issue, which I thought would help me propel my life forward. And, you know, so that's kind of like why I started to pursue it.
So were you doing book studies, internet studies? How did you learn all this?
So they didn't have any sort of books or studies in prison. I'm pretty much self-taught. So I pretty much picked up newspapers and magazines. And I looked at newspapers and magazines, and that's pretty much what it was. And I started to develop the knack for storytelling. So because I wasn't able to read and write, my ability to understand stories when it comes to phrases and terms helped me develop the financial philosophies that I teach today. So it's kind of like a, it's kind of like a different kind of education where did I learn how to adjust to presenting financial education to other incarcerated people who could find a value in that despite them having life sentences in prison.
So what year did you get out?
Almost 2 years ago.
And what have you been able to do with that going forward?
So since I've been home, I developed, I established our financial education company called Feel Inc. Feel's, the acronym is F-E-E-L. It stands for Financial Empowerment Emotional Literacy. And so what we teach is we teach a proprietary curriculum designed to teach men and women how to separate their emotional decisions from their financial decisions. In the process of also doing that, we designed a management company to help manage my personal career, which I've got the opportunity to work with my life story being turned into a feature film. So we're working on that and building programs for nonprofits and prison systems designed for people to take our program and come up with the results they're looking for.
Now, while you were still in, how long was it before you started really sharing the information you were putting together, your ideas, with some of your fellow inmates?
Can you repeat that part again?
How long was it before you really didn't just, sort of drink in all this information but want to share it with others?
So inside of the county jail where I was housed when I first turned 18 and I was sent to prison from the juvenile facility, the guards used to bring the newspaper into the pod and put it on the table. And wherever cell grabbed the paper first is where the paper started. So this one particular day, I ran out of the cell to grab the newspaper. And everyone grabs the sports section because we all want to be sports. So this particular day, I dash out here, grab this paper, and I turn. I'm like, man, I got the paper. And when I turn, another prisoner said, hey, man, you play the stock market? And I was like, what the hell is that? And he was like, man, I see you got that business section in here. And I was pissed because I thought I had the sports section. And when I turned to go back to grab the sports section, I looked at him. I said, hey, man, what's the stock market? He said, that's the place where white folks keep all their money. And I said, can you do that from prison? He said, man, you could do it from anywhere. And that little piece there sparked my entire journey towards financial education.
Wow. And over two decades of learning this while you were still incarcerated.
Yeah. So we built a program called a basic financial course. The warden of the prison heard about me teaching finance on the prison yard. I was sitting on the yard in the grass teaching it to fellow prisoners. And the warden was like, you know, man, you need to teach this to other people. And I was refusing to do it. I was like, I'm not no teacher. And he was like, it's really not your choice. You can teach this class or you can go to the hall. Take your pick. And so we designed a class to teach people. And I got an opportunity to, a reporter heard about a guy in a California prison doing stocks, and she worked for the Wall Street Journal. So she contacted the prison. She flew from New York. She came out to the prison, and she interviewed me. And it was the article was called Murderer Turned Stock Picker is the Oracle of San Quentin, which is where I was housed at the time. And a TED Talk came after that. And before you know it, I was doing full-fledged programs and building programs for individuals, celebrities, public officials, all kind of different people that we were working with while I was still incarcerated.
Wow. If it wasn't watching you talk about all this, I would think, oh, this has got to be a movie. These things don't just happen like this.
I appreciate that.
I mean, this is a pretty unusual experience.
It is. It's a lot more unusual to me now being free than it was when I was inside, just because I didn't really know what it was like to be in community and do finance. I'd always done it in prison. And so, I was running a hedge fund in prison. So managing money while inside, you're managing millions of dollars for correctional officers and for people in the community, which is what I was doing inside, building these programs. And the goal was for me to, although I was somewhat on the other side of the rules, the goal was about change and transformation, which is how I thought at the time. And I thought that financial education, if guards and prisoners had it alike, we could find common ground and that can bring down the criminal and the crime. And so that's what we was building and designing.
You must have had a heck of amount of credibility there because, I mean, normally if you were to say as an inmate to a corrections officer, here, let me manage your money, they would, you know, that probably you'd probably be in trouble just for saying that.
So they have a thing in California prisons that's called overfamiliarity. And overfamiliarity is any time a prisoner gets too close to a correctional guard or a staff member where the prison has to deem it a threat, and so they typically transfers that a prisoner or that guard to another institution to separate them. So in my case, these things happen, but because of the amount of money that was being made based on the information, so I started telling guards, to your point about the financing, obviously they looked at me like I was crazy. Dude, what are you talking about? Put you in the hole.
Right.
So what I decided to do was study the California Department of the retirement system, CalPERS. And so I figured that if I knew more about their retirement than they did, they wouldn't think I was a laughingstock. So I spent a couple years, studied the California retirement system, and I went back to the guards and showed them how I could move their money through the retirement system over to these accounts, and that's pretty much what I did. And that's how I got them to believe in what I was doing, and that's how I got the business off the ground.
Wow. What do you see in the next few years for what you're going to do to with your business and to help others?
So the state of California is getting ready to pass Senate Bill AB 2729, which is going to mandate that in the state of California, all schools, particularly high school students, have some form of financial education in the schools. And by 2030, they want full-blown semesters for teaching. So what my company is doing is developing the platform that we believe is the standard platform for financial education in this country, particularly in the state of California, where crime is high and where financial literacy is lacking. Many of the crimes that are committed today, we believe, are financially related. And so we believe that to tap into the emotional side of why people committing crimes. So we're now writing up paperwork and proposals to submit to the senators and to the county and to our partners that we're working with to get this process off the ground. So that's pretty much what we're doing in concert to the movie deals. And I got my own like clothing line, Nothing Beats the Stocks, just different stuff that I'm out doing and really enjoying myself. So that's pretty much what we're doing for the next couple of years.
Wow. And you're going to be speaking tomorrow night, sharing probably much of what you've just shared here.
Yeah. So I'll be speaking tomorrow at the graduation. One thing I will say is that if I had the luxury to go to, and it was that, to Judge Roberts' court today to watch him do drug court. And I told him that if I had had someone or some people or a team of people in his drug court, when I went to court, I would have never went to prison. And I for sure wouldn't have received a sentence of 54 years life in prison as a teenager. And so I feel that despite what anybody does, particularly children, you should never give children life in prison. I don't care what they do, the kids. And so seeing what he did today in the court with adults and how he don't even wear a robe in drug court. So off the top, it was just so transformative. And so the honor to speak tomorrow is a lot of what's happening today leading up to tomorrow. So it's really an honor for me just to be able to have the opportunity to share with the men and women here that'll be there tomorrow.
Well, Wall Street Carol, thanks for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it. It's been an honor and privilege out here in Oregon. The people in Oregon are great. It is hot as hell. I didn't know it was going to be this hot. Excuse me to say that, but the weather's great.
So, Judge, let's get you back over here for a minute. We've got about a minute and a half here on Inside Douglas County before we wrap up. Obviously, just for coming out tomorrow night, you get to hear all of that and more.
Well, Kyle, the program's growing, and when we are at a place where we get to hear people who have these types of stories, there's no telling what the impact of hearing from somebody like Wall Street is going to have, not just on the participants and the graduates, but the other folks who are going to be in attendance tomorrow. And so I would invite everybody in the community to come out and not only see what Wall Street has to say, which is profound in and of itself, but to celebrate some individuals who put in the time and effort to be celebrated for their journeys to this point.
And how long is the process of being in the drug court program?
It varies, but someone, you know, one of the things that I love about the program is someone who theoretically could be facing 5 to 10 years in prison can get through the program in as short as 14 months. And so, again, when you talk about saving taxpayers money, even though that's not the primary concern, that's a huge collateral benefit. But these folks are changing their lives around instead of sitting in prison and wasting away.
All right. Again, that's tomorrow night, 5:15 at the Douglas County Fairgrounds, right?
Correct.
All right. Circuit Court Judge Robert Johnson with Drug Court and Curtis Wall Street. Carol, wow, thanks for coming in.
You bet. Thanks,
Kyle. Thank
you. All right. 12:58, News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240. KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.